Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. That's Bob Mackwitz. I'm Matt Cause. Bob, I'm only a couple days left in my home quarantine here before I get released into the world where it's much safer out there in the streets of Toronto.
Yeah, that's funny. You're going to get released only to be sent right back. You're just going to walk out and then you're going to be like Homer fading into the bushes like that meme.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm the safest one out there, everybody. I've had so many negative tests.
Seriously, I'm going to stand behind you.
Yeah.
Operation Get Behind Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I am just like, what does one say? You know, actually, it's funny. Like, again, like everybody, I'm watching Omicron, but also trying to like take all the news in as it comes, right? There's lots we don't know about it, and it's super contagious, but maybe the effects aren't so bad. Like, just trying to sort out many messages, right?
Yeah.
And just like the first time when sports gave me the first thing to worry about, now sports again sort of delivers the shot across the bow that everyone pays attention to. First time it was the canceling of that NBA game after Rudy Gobert tested positive way back in the day.
Yep.
And that kind of kickstarted the dominoes. And then for me this time it was finding out, like, I just see Eric Kareen tweet just randomly. I'll remember this moment, writer for The Athletic. He's like, MLSC will update you on policy around the ticket cancellations. I'm like, oh, what? Uh-oh, that sounds bad. Immediately go to Google, Google MLSC. Oh, no, they're cutting this in half. Well, that nobody voluntarily says, let's give back millions of dollars.
Yes, and in Montreal, the Canadians, last second, it was, nope, no one's coming to the game.
Oh, my God. So... all right. So you're in the sports world, Matt. Is there anything you're hearing about what's happening? What could be next? Like, what's your take on this?
No, it's just, it's all these leagues now scrambling. It's, you know, the NFL, first off, all the leagues heighten protocols. So I think, you know, where athletes, what they can do, where they can go, that's now about to get seriously restricted again. It makes sense to make it 50%. Try that for a couple of weeks. See what happens with the numbers. I know the NFL, it's weird. They are both making things more difficult. But if you're a vaccinated player, they're making it so it might be quicker for you to get back on the field. I don't fully understand how that works. But I also know the Cleveland Browns have 20 players on COVID protocol, and they're supposed to play tomorrow against the Raiders. So it's really just all the leagues scrambling. And basically what it comes down to, Bob, is every league is going to do whatever they can so they don't have to have cancellations or put anything on pause.
Well, and last night, the Raptors and the Bulls canceled and the Leafs and the Flames canceled.
Yep.
So it was so weird. Strombo came back into town yesterday. And so we met up on Ossington at our favorite restaurant, Golden Turtle. And that's kind of our thing. And we sit there and we have Vietnamese soup. And so I haven't been there in a long time. Haven't really been to any restaurants in a really long time. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'm vaccinated. I got my passport. I'm legally entitled to be there. And I'm in this restaurant in this enclosed space with my mask off, talking to somebody who's, you know, a foot and a half away across the other side of the table who just got off a plane. And I'm thinking, how weird is it that this feels like nothing changed, but tonight's games are canceled?
Yeah, I know.
Like it's the cognitive disconnect between this hasn't changed. Oh, but this has to change wildly. Oh, but not this. It's just hard to track.
I think emotionally we're living minute by minute in some sort of compartmentalized way where it's like, okay, this dinner is fine. Ooh, that game isn't fine. And should I get on the streetcar? Of course I should. Or wait, it's just every moment you're asked. Every moment is a moment. When it shouldn't be. It should have just been about soup and Strombo and Christ, man, the D-bag music conversation you guys must have had. But it should have just been about that.
So there's like, I don't know, 25 people in the restaurant. And I thought, well, they're advising that there shouldn't be get-togethers for more than 10 people over the Christmas break, right?
Yeah.
And yet here's 25 people who presumably are all vaccinated because they couldn't get in unless they showed their vaccination status, passport, and ID. So in a weird way, according to the rules, this restaurant is safer than any 10-person gathering I might go to, which might not necessarily have vaccination checks. So why is one being advised against and the other one is being not only supported, but, you know, get out there and support your local businesses?
Sure. That's my answer. No idea.
You know, I'm not saying anything that's particularly insightful or clever. I think I just have the same questions that everybody else does. And if you have a kid, there's an extra part of this, which is school is fine, but here are the rapid tests and make sure the kids take all their stuff home. So after the break, in case they don't come back, they've got their stuff.
Yeah, it feels like you're just consulting the magic eight ball right now in terms of for answers for it.
It's such a great way to put it, you know. And I'm not going to turn this into a political thing because I think mistakes have been made across the board by groups of all stripes. But I will say Ford in particular approaches these things the same way exactly every time. Don't pay any attention to it until it's really big and then announce you're doing everything you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and look, I get it. I get that there are political considerations. I also get that society isn't built for this sort of thing. But, you know, like, this is the fifth time this has come around. Like, were they shocked when the numbers shot up because that's what everyone said was going to happen and it's happened four times before? Like, now you've got, like, I'm over 50 and I can't. Sandra said to me today, my wife, should we drive to Sarnia to get you a booster? Because that's the closest place we can find.
No. Oh, God.
You know, like, they're not prepared again, but how could you not be prepared? Considering job number one is this.
Yeah, it feels like they're always about a week behind. And when you see like lineup, the only lineup that's longer for a booster shot seems to be these pop-up burger joints. You know, there's one for an In-N-Out one somewhere downtown, but I mean, God, the hard part there is also, yeah, just the other side of where we see the, I don't know, we see the oh, this is going to get heavy, the rates of suicide go up or overdoses or bankruptcies and the mental anxiety and everything that goes on when things get shut down and everyone gets isolated in businesses. Like, it's just, good Lord, it's so hard to find the right balance.
You know, maybe kids shouldn't be masked in schools if they're vaxxed. Like, should high school kids who have been vaxxed have to wear masks? Should there be vaccine mandates for kids? Because, you know, I was listening to this pod the other day, and I didn't realize this, but they were saying how when there was a polio outbreak in the 50s, you couldn't go to school unless you were vaccinated. You couldn't. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And this whole sort of, like, let's make society great again and have common sense like we used to. Well, common sense used to be, there's a vaccine. Okay, take it.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, this whole society used to have so much more on the ball. Well, you know, they didn't, you know, we weren't quite as led by conspiracy back then. And I've got somebody inside. Well, I got somebody inside. I know somebody inside Queens Park. I phrased it the way my in-laws would say it. I got somebody inside Queens Park. But, you know, Ford's got a divided caucus, right? Like, you've got Northern MPPs who are like, we're not doing anything. You've got people who ideologically want him to be hands off. And you've got people who are like, you know, don't get caught with your pants down because it could burn you at the polls. So he's fielding advice from everywhere and they're all legit point of views in his world. So that's complicated.
You said caucus.
I know. I got a question for you. Here's a question.
Yeah.
Which athlete are you more excited to watch in 2022? Scottie Barnes or Austin Matthews?
Oh, that's a good question, Bob. I think the answer is Scottie Barnes because the promise of his ceiling keeps going up and up and up. So there's a mystery there. The best version of Austin Matthews, we kind of know what it looks like. It's Ovechkin, you know, like that's, and so we know what that looks like. With Scottie Barnes, we're not sure as much. And then also just the plain reality is that basketball players have a greater impact on a team winning or losing. Just look at what Kevin Durant is doing. He's so good, even I'm rooting for him. But of those two, Bob, I'm going to give a slight edge to Scotty Barnes.
I don't know myself.
It's hard.
It was Scotty Barnes, and then Austin Matthews went on this crazy heater.
Yep.
And remember that, you know, Scotty Barnes is an exciting young rookie. He has the chance to be a superstar. Some people say Kawhi. Some people say if he keeps growing, Giannis. Like, just that tantalizing potential. It's really fun. But Austin Matthews doesn't have potential. Like, he's now trying to enter the realm of the great goal scorers of all time, which Ovechkin is obviously at the top of that list. So, yes, absolutely. But as you say, like, one of the things that's so compelling about Matthews right now is we do know his ceiling because he's there. It's real and it's spectacular.
It is. Oh, yeah. No, it's incredible. Like, obviously, Matthews is far better at what he does than Scotty Barnes. Everyone knows that. That is about as captain obvious as it gets. But in terms of the way you phrase the question, the most interesting, I'm more curious to see Scotty because it's more of an unwritten book yet. I want to see what that looks like. And also, the Maple Leafs can, and just regular season, we won't even get into the cesspool of the postseason. The Maple Leafs can have a great, successful regular season with, even if Matthews takes a bit of a dip, because there's other talent and Jack Campbell, and hey, look what Morgan Riley's doing. For the Raptors, their success this year is, I think, more tied into the development of what is this thing in Scotty Barnes than anything else on the squad.
Totally true. I looked at some of his stats just because I was curious, and he's 36.7% from three, which is so much better. Like, this was what they said is if he could get to, he could be a superstar. Well, he's starting there. Now, he may drop off. You know, they may start defending him differently. Like, he'll have growing pains, all of that. But the point is, we've now seen a version of this guy where the very thing that we thought he needed to work on, he already has. We've seen him be a great playmaker. He kind of overcommits on defense. If anything, he's going to have to learn how to pull back a little bit. But that's the enthusiasm of youth. When he really learns how to control a game, he's going to control a game on both ends of the floor. And it's thrilling. And it's funny because Austin Matthews, in a way, I'm enjoying him so much because of his defense. Like, we all know he can score the shit out of a goal, but he just feels like a heart level player now because he plays all across the ice. And so both these guys are thrilling is the point. But I think I'm going to go with Matthews because the thing about Scotty Barnes is he's only taken 12 shots a game, 13 shots a game, you know? Like,
yep.
He's really got a kind of a limited role in the offense. It's just that he does so many things. It feels like he's more active, but he's not really putting himself in positions to dominate. Austin Matthews is dominant. And is there anything better in sports than a player who can dominate?
Oh, no. Like, what we're seeing is the near full potential of Matthews realized on the ice on a night in and night out basis. It is incredible. It is stunning to watch. And we're now living in the middle of it, of that first real prime.
As they say, these are the good old days.
Exactly.
So this is an interesting Torontonian thing because we're not a city of stars. Even our best players were rarely the best players. You know, Roberto Alomar was the best second baseman in the game, and we kind of didn't know how to celebrate that at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, there were a lot of other great players on those Jays squads, so it's not like, you know, he was head and shoulders above everyone else. But even like with Vladdy Guerrero Jr., like, sure, everybody loves him, but he's a phenom. We don't really know what to do with somebody who's better than everybody else. Maybe this is just our gray Protestant, quasi-socialist Toronto mentality, but we like the grinders. We don't know what to do with stars.
Yeah.
Part of me is sort of like, let's take a moment and pretend that we do and just enjoy the shit out of Austin Matthews and not worry about anything and just sort of say, you know what? We got the best guy. Let's, you know, as Bjork says, takes courage to enjoy yourself. Let's enjoy ourselves and just say, yes, Scotty's time's coming, but Austin Matthews is the now. And I'm here for it.
Absolutely. Everyone should just embrace it and just live in the glow that is everything about Auston Matthews. You're absolutely right. And it is just part of the nature of the Toronto sports fan of not knowing how to handle it. We're not Boston. You know, we're not Boston at all when it comes to this sort of thing.
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about how we looked at Roger Clemens as a Jay versus how we looked at Roy Halladay.
Mm.
Both great pitchers. But there was always a feeling with Clemens that he was kind of an asshole and he wasn't our guy.
Yes.
Whereas with Halladay, we talked so much about his character. Like somehow it was important that he had great character. I don't know that other cities. Like I was thinking about this with Mitch Marner. Like I don't really like Mitch Marner as a person. You know what I mean? I don't wish any bad against him, but you know, I think William Nylander is a little bit misunderstood. I think Morgan Riley is a very impressive young man. You know, Marner seems to me a bit like a spoiled baby who's grown up his whole life with a generational talent and has had everyone bow to his needs. And when he doesn't get what he wants, he feels like one of the characters on Succession. He's a little bit Roman Roy. He just needs to have his things his way. So I don't really like him. I don't admire him. But I sure like watching him play hockey. And I thought, why do I have to like him?
Yeah. Well,
do you have to like him?
Yes, you do. To truly cheer for a guy, you have to be pulling for him. You have to like him. Let's go to Kevin Durant for a second. I opened my show after the Nets beat the Raptors by saying, like, what I saw last night was incredible. And the funny thing is Steph Curry sets the 3-point record on the same night where Durant wills his team to a win with no one there, and he was dealing with his own ankle injury. And Kevin Durant is the hardest superstar to root for me, in basketball, while Steph Curry is maybe the easiest one. Well, watching Durant do what he did and the joy and the pride afterwards in his postgame, it's like, oh my God, I can root for this. I can cheer for this. I like seeing him express happiness and joy and pride versus usually where he's distrustful and sullen. Now, maybe he's obviously a completely different person in a locker room with his teammates. And maybe it's the same way with Marner. There's just, you want, and it's not like you need the guy to be the best person and for you to agree on everything, but for you to truly cheer for a player, there is a level of buy-in, an emotional level of buy-in that's needed.
It's interesting because I think you're right, but history suggests otherwise. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I think you're right. If I think about how I cheer for sports, again, I pointed out I don't really love, you know, there's things about the Leafs that I don't like, and some of it is because of the way they behaved. And I kind of feel like you need to win us back. And it's not just the on-the-ice stuff. It's the off-the-ice stuff, too. But Barry Bonds, during his 73 home run season, when everybody thought he was juiced up, like, it kind of felt like a ripoff that people weren't celebrating it. And Ted Williams, for years, refused to salute the crowd. And, you know, those are, like, how many guys are, like, even if we wanted, like, Kareem was not likable. Bill Russell was not likable. There's an awful lot of great players who just weren't likable. And history remembers them as great. But in the moment, did people really cheer for them?
Not to the same extent. I think what it comes down to is, you don't need to know everything about your athlete. I don't mind being lied to. All I really want is that the athlete has a certain level of joy and happiness in their craft, because it translates to the fan. It translates on TV. Like there's something about Steph Curry. There's something about LeBron James. You know, you could go up and down, and it's why it's sometimes hard to root for New England, because there's Bill Belichick being all grumpy. You know, it puts up like a bit of an emotional barrier for the casual fan.
You may not realize this, but it's a very Aristotelian point of view about what the purpose of life is, which is the purpose of life is to be what you are. And people who are fully what they are fully realize their life. It's interesting. When you were talking, I was thinking about how when I watch musicians play, there's a lot of players who are technically proficient, but if they're lacking joy in their playing, there's a ceiling, you know, there's a limit to how far you can go. And sometimes you can get a player who's maybe not as good, but they put so much into it and that comes out in their playing. Like Jimmy Page is not the quote unquote greatest guitar player of all time. He just gets so much damn feeling out of his playing. And so maybe he is the greatest player of all time. And you're right. Like, you can dislike LeBron. You cannot question whether or not it's fun to watch him play.
Yeah. And you know the joy he takes in it. You know what? Let me give you Bob and Andrew. Go.
Who's the perfect example of this for you and I?
Mm.
Kobe.
Yep. Kobe's a great one.
You know, you and I had how many conversations during the height of Kobe's reign where we wished it was somebody else, but we never said, God, we don't like watching that guy play.
That's a perfect sports example where, you know, and especially after the trial in Colorado and just he just retreats in the shell or he creates, you know, the Black Mamba and his stupid nicknames. He was incredible to watch, but very hard to cheer for, throwing Shaq under the bus, wanting to trade Gasol, wanting to leave at one point the Lakers before they brought in Gasol. Excuse me. Yes, Kobe's a great example.
So, yeah, just to bring it back to the Scottie versus Austin and the whole who do you root for, like, you know, I don't know Austin. I feel I know how he likes to dress. I like how he dresses, kind of dresses like George. So I don't feel like I need to get to know him. I don't feel like anybody really has gotten to know him. He doesn't have a persona the way Doug Gilmore did or Wendell Clark did. He's kind of defined by his skill in a lot of ways. And maybe that's good enough.
Yep, it is. Oh, yeah. I think, though, that the highest level of connection between fan and athlete or entertainer, when there is that joy factor. And, you know, actually, Bob, let me give you a quick example. If you actually read the stand-up of Kevin Hart, it's not that funny. But right. His joy, his energy, his enthusiasm, his work ethic. Then there, if you actually just look at the IMDb page of The Rock, you think to yourself, this guy's who? How does he pick all these horrible movies and these bombs, but we all resonate and we all are attracted to The Rock because of the work ethic, the energy, and the joy that he takes. So there is sort of like I think of those guys when I think of, there's others that are more technically more proficient as a comedy writer, as an actor, but those are just two entertainers we all gravitate towards.
I think Kevin Hart's such a great example because in my younger days, with a bit more comedy snob, I was sort of like, Kevin Hart, you know? But after watching him, like, Steph Appolito, I remember she was advocating for Kevin Hart, and I was like, I don't think so. But she was right in the sense that he's actually a ton of fun to watch. And I don't think you have to be clever to be likable. Some ways,
no.
Impediment. So, yeah, let's, and it's funny, you brought up Ovi, you know, how Austin Matthews is in that Ovi territory. I don't think Austin Matthews will ever be loved around the league like Ovi is, because Ovi translates that joy. Winning does a lot, though. We'll see, like, he's entering his takeover the league years, Austin Matthews is. So let's see who comes out. Like, let's see what personality blossoms, you know. He's going to be increasingly in the limelight. Let's see who he becomes.
Well, if the Leafs won a Stanley Cup, that version of Austin Matthews would be nuts. And the other day he was asked about, hey, your team leads the NHL in points. He wanted nothing to do with it. He gave 18 cliches in 18 seconds, and he would rather have been asked by Steve Simmons about his COVID status than talking about team success. Because right now, no Leaf wants to talk about success because of the playoffs. But if they won a cup, you could get a very different version. Just like Ovechkin, he wins a cup, and then he's doing keg stands, and we love him. And now Canadians aren't as angry if Ovi passes Gretzky for the most goals. You get some wins, it changes everything.
Yeah, that's a great point. And also, I think you're alluding to something with Austin Matthews, which is he's actually... like, he's that guy. I think he will grow into that guy. In some ways, he's got to carry along a team that's been pretty unlikable for the last 15 to 20 years. So he's got history to contend with this fan base. But yep, you're right. Winning will fix everything. Everybody's going to love Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner does great in a cup final. Like, it's just winning. Bill Russell was not likable. Bill Russell is one of the most loved athletes in Boston.
Yes.
11 titles help.
It's not bad.
I think of all these guys, Kareem is the most interesting because Kareem was like the righteous warrior, you know, and did not suffer fools gladly. But I think as we look back on Kareem, he's like the less problematic Jim Brown in the sense that, like, just utterly dominant and kind of unknowable, except on his terms, you know?
Yeah. And which also makes his appearance in Airplane that much more remarkable.
Like, Game of Death with Bruce Lee.
Yeah, but the other one was comedy. He pulled it off and he grabs the kid. He said, listen, you tell your old man to get dragged by Bill Walton. Like, just he was great.
You know, Kareem pisses me off because when I read his writing, he's a really, really good writer, like a really good writer. And you think, oh, man, I'd like to write as well as this guy does. And then you remember, oh, and he's also probably one of the three greatest basketball players who ever lived. It's like you're not allowed to write that good if it's your fourth or fifth best, quality.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Come on.
Agreed.
Yeah. Shall we do a couple top fives? We talked about maybe, I don't know if this is going to be the last pod of the year, but we thought with the year wrapping up, maybe we'd do a little bit of look back. So we divided up some different topics that you and I talk about often. And do you want to do one here?
Yeah. I got top five sports moments, top five wines. You got top five TV shows and records. Do you want to do the meaty one and do the sports one first or save that for later? What do you want to do?
Let's do a fun one. Why don't I do a fun one? I'll do meat and then you do sports and we'll see how much time we have left after that. Okay.
Done. Before any of that, shout out to our sponsor, our friend, our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. If you need legal help and with everything going on, who knows what the future has in store? We're all in chaos right now. And you know what you need in the middle of chaos? You need some calm. You need a foundation. Well, if you need a legal foundation, you need some calm, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. Look him up. Small boutique wine. I was going to say winery. He'd actually appreciate that. Law firm. He's our lawyer. He's fantastic. He was keeping tabs on me when I was trapped in South Africa. And so, yeah, jeffpollock.com. What do you got, Bob, for your list?
So I want to point out there is so much TV. This has to be an incomplete list.
Impossible.
Shows I haven't seen that I think might have made the list if I had was this F1 show that's on Netflix that everyone's excited about. Bo Burnham's Inside. We Are Lady Parts, which is a BBC show about a Muslim punk band, and Only Murders Inside the Building because you know you've got the awesome cast. Okay, almost made it that I have seen was Dickinson. The research on that for Apple TV, The Life of Emily Dickinson as a Kid, is so good. They've actually put it into the Library of Congress. WandaVision almost made it, but the finale was not good enough. And Get Back with the Beatles is spectacular, but it's a little long.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
You know, love it. It's just, it's so long. You know,
but right. By the way, right. Bob, that's a shock that Peter Jackson, who took the smallest book, The Hobbit, and turned it into three-hour movies, would make something that's a little long. That guy needs an editor.
Okay, so I think one of the best personality tests you could usher to someone now is have them watch Get Back and then explain who they think the biggest asshole in the Beatles is. And it'll say a lot about that person. You know, like, I personally think George sounded really whiny. But that's because I fancy myself a boss. And Paul McCartney was the boss. He was just trying to get him to do stuff. And he's like, you're not the boss of me. And Paul's like, well, I kind of am, you know.
Oh, I kind of am the boss of you.
Was that a British accent?
That's my limited Paul McCartney. That's a good listener, Bob. All right. What were you five that made the, okay. Now I feel like I'm close to being like a sea captain. So what are your top five TV shows?
You sound like Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse. Number five, Squid Game. Have you seen it?
I've seen the first episode. It seems like a real hoot. I will watch all of it.
It's amazingly constructed. And so much has been said about it by think pieces because it was a way to discuss class. I think what's really missing in all this is the style of it, which felt so comic book, but sort of alternative grown-up comic books. When we talk about comic book movies, we tend to talk about, Thor or the Avengers, whatever. And a lot of that is soaked in the Jack Kirby style, like that classic comic book style we all grew up with. But since then, the art world has really changed, and I think Squid Game kind of defines that. So it just looks so damn good. Okay, number four, Reservoir Dogs. Reservation Dogs, I should say. I knew I was going to make that mistake. Just a really cool coming-of-age story. Number three, a Canadian version, sort of similar to Reservation Dogs, not exactly, but also a young person finding their way. And my full disclosure, my wife worked closely on this one, but I recommend everyone go to CBC Jam and watch Sort Of, which is a fantastic story about a young person trying to find their way in Toronto. And really great. Number two, and we can get into this, is Loki. And the reason I want to get into this is because I have noticed, as I was doing some research and trying to remind myself of all the shows from this year, that WandaVision is frequently very high in the list of critics' year-end lists, and Loki is almost never there. And I don't get that, because to my mind, Loki was vastly superior to WandaVision. I know you've seen both. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. I was one of those people. I was not a fan of WandaVision. It felt too much like, hey, we want to show our ability to create, just to recreate classic TV shows. I just wasn't a fan of it. Too many episodes where not much happened. I loved Loki. What's that?
Gimmicky for you?
Yeah, it was. Beyond Catherine Hahn saying she killed the dog, there was really nothing I really liked about WandaVision. Spoiler alert, the dog dies.
Catherine was really good. Elizabeth Olsen was really good. Paul Bettany was really good. There was just a lot of good acting. But here's the thing about Loki that I love. One was, it started off as a buddy comedy, and Owen Wilson was so good.
Yes.
Tom Hiddleston's always good, but to pair him up with someone just as good, great buddy comedy. But even in terms of the plot, it moved the Marvel Universe forward, and it was thrilling to see how this was going to be used as a springboard to other stories. The introduction of the multiverse, the introduction of Kang. There are so many ways in which this could have been clunky with exposition, but it wasn't. It was always fun. And, you know, there's so many little things that we got from it, you know, like Alligator Loki. Miss Minutes. Voiced by the great Tara Strong. It had so much personality, and it managed to do something. Marvel movies at their best accomplish galactic tectonic nexus events and have memorable little moments as well. And right. That it was Marvel at its best.
Yes, it's hard to do high stakes, because like Hawkeye is low stakes. Loki was the highest of stakes. To be able to do it, to keep it moving, you're not going to get everything. Something will confuse you. But to keep it moving, to keep it fresh and light, but still have, you know, just the gravitas of it. Yeah, I thought they nailed that balance.
In most years, Loki would be my TV show of the year, but this year it has to be Succession, top TV show of the year. In my home, Succession occupies a place that TV hasn't since Mad Men. Prestige drama that you drop everything to watch in real time. It is, you know, there's so many think pieces on it. There's nothing I can really add to the dialogue except to say that in the same way that, I mean, how many times have you read The Master and Margarita?
Ooh! Oh, God, it's been years since I read it. I love that book.
Right. But if you were to go back and read it, you would find new things in it and be delighted by it again, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think Succession is the same kind of thing, where you could drop this 10 years, come back and read it like you do a classic novel, watch it like it's a classic novel, because there's just so much in it.
I'm going to have to wait for Amy to be flying again before I can watch it. We're a one TV household, and she's just not into Succession. So I got to wait for her to fly till I can watch it.
For all my fellow Succession watchers, and you won't understand this, but it's not a compliment. Matt, you come from a wealthy family where there's lots of siblings, and eventually there'll be questions who takes over Latimer, right? Mm-hmm. You are Connor. That doesn't mean anything to you, but it will to somebody listening.
Thankfully, in our case, my my brother Josh and my brother Scott are are doing a good job of eventually with the succession of W.D. Latimer and maybe some help from our cousins as well. So we'd be the opposite of succession. That show seems like everyone's angry and fighting. Ours would be more like mom's having a cigarette. Make sure that no one sees her in her office having a smoke. That would be our big thing.
Imagine Frasier with a meth addiction.
Ooh, I like that. It's Maris. Like Maris is getting skittier again.
The cleverness of Frasier with the rotted teeth of a meth addict.
Iddy ate all the cocaine.
All right. Top five sports stories of the year done by the guy who still works in sports.
At number five, Bob, at the age of 50, he hadn't done anything in ages, and then he wins the PGA Championship. Phil Mickelson at 50. Not only is it a big story on its own, but with Tiger Woods starting to slowly maybe come back, I'm sure Tiger's got to be thinking, Phil did it at 50, and I'm in better shape than him. So number five, Phil Mickelson.
Okay, totally not interesting to me, but I think interesting to others. You know, I think golf is a Babylon sport, so, and I'm ashamed to know that I'm actually apparently good at it. It's not like me to sequester myself from things that I'm good at, but in this case, I will with golf. But if you say so, I'm with you. Nothing to add. Okay, number four, maybe I'll be more interesting on this note.
46 home runs, 100 RBI, 26 steals. And he went 9-2 with a 3.18 ERA and had 156 strikeouts, topping off at over 100 miles per hour. The MVP season of Shohei Ohtani.
Is there anything more thrilling in sports than the two-athlete sport?
No. With Deion Sanders, Bo Jackson, that's it. It's Bo and Deion, and now we got Shohei.
I don't know that there's anybody who could do it now because of how specialized you have to be in order to succeed. But just being able to go offense, defense in a sport, like, you're a big football historian guy. Like, wasn't it fair to say that the greatest athletes in the early days of the NFL, if not often, at least it wasn't rare for them to play both sides of the ball?
Happened all the time. Absolutely. Where a guy would be a tight end and would be a linebacker. You know, no, absolutely. Like, I think Chuck Bednarik was one of the last ones. He played like 60 minutes for the Eagles when they beat the Packers in the NFL championship. It was before the Super Bowl. So, no, it's awesome. Or Deion Sanders getting two singles, getting on a private jet, and then playing corner for Jerry Glanville and the too legit to quit Falcons.
Roy Jones Jr. Playing in essentially a G League basketball game, and then that night having a fight.
Yeah.
these are the things that blow your mind. But I think in today's sports world, things are so trained and so specialized, and these athletes are so good that simply athletic prowess can't do it anymore. Whether it's a Kyler Murray who can play a bunch of sports or a Russell Wilson who can play a bunch of sports, like, maybe they could, but the amount of training they would need to actually do it and compete with all of these new athletes, I think, is impossible. And the reason I'm saying this is because what Ohtani did might be as close as we get to that now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. He is. That's the closest. There's nothing, there's no other version of him in sports.
You see this sometimes where an outfielder will throw an inning because it's a blowout and the bullpen is ragged. And sometimes that guy might have pitched, but he's not a pitcher. What's incredible about Ohtani is that he had an MVP caliber season doing two things.
It was, and we, by the way, we might never see that again. Like, eventually they might say, Shohei, we got to make you be one or the other.
Is this okay? So we talk about unbreakable records. Is this an unbreakable record? Like, I know it's not technically a record, but is this an unbreakable feat? Like, will anybody ever again have a season like this in baseball?
I could see it. I could see it only because now that we have a blueprint, and because I think that it wouldn't come from a North American training ground. This would be because we're a little bit more conservative. This is how we get done. If you want to make it in the show, here's how you have to do it. I think it could be done if it was from Japan again, or a nation that isn't Canada or the United States, or even like the Dominican, or like, I don't think it can be anywhere in this sphere of the world.
In some ways, it's the pornification of sports, in the sense that when it's ubiquitous, nothing is shocking anymore. When I think back when I was a kid and Fernando Valenzuela came out of nowhere and became like this dominant rookie, or Dwight Gooden, and the fascination that we had for these players, you know, even, you know, from the Mariners, Seattle Mariners, super fast Ichiro coming over, like the idea of a Japanese player coming over, like there was just such a fascination around that year. He was chasing 400. I don't know. Like this story is so incredible. I realize it's the Angels, and, you know, they found a way to bury the career of Mike Trout. But even still, like, we're so used to having so much thrown at us all the time, and our nervous systems are always revved. I don't know if we can even, like, we as a fan, you know, fans of the sport can even appreciate this anymore, because we're told every day something incredible happened. Something incredible did happen, and it kind of happened under our noses.
Well, Shohei, though, he was the story of baseball for the first half.
He should have been a pop culture phenomenon.
Well, he did make the Good Morning Americas of the world, if that means anything.
It doesn't, because he should be a household name with what he managed to do.
No, but that's how you become a household name. You get on Good Morning America. You get on these big TV morning shows where it's watched by people that are at best casual sports fans. I think Shohei got maybe a little more attention than you think.
Well, here's the thing. I spend more time with casual sports fans than you do, because you work in the sports world and most of your friends are sports nuts. But when
fair point.
But I hang out with a lot of people who are outside of that world, and they're not talking about Shohei Ohtani. They're just not. They don't know who he is. And they don't care.
They're the artistic, hipsters, Bob. They don't get time, Daddy-O, for sports and your corporate greed.
All my hipster friends like sports. I'm talking about the dads down at the school. But I did like how you found a way to turn it against me. What's number three?
Yep, thank you. Number three. Remember in the playoffs early on when everyone was counting down when he was at the free throw line and he couldn't hit a shot? Mm-hmm. Then he gets to game six of the finals and he shoots 17 of 19 from the free throw line. The Giannis Antetokounmpo won in the playoffs 35, 13, and 5. And just sort of the opposite of the Hardens and the Kyries and the Durants of the world. The guy's like, nope, I'm staying here. I'm staying in the small marketplace. And yes, Milwaukee, they got lucky. They got lucky because the injuries to the Brooklyn Nets. We understand that. But the Giannis, the summer of Giannis, the playoffs of Giannis, winning the MVP, then winning the finals, is my number three.
The NBA is in such an incredible place right now in terms of its talent. I can't remember a time since the era of Jordan at his best, when there was still Barkley and Kemp and those guys. I can't remember a time when there were so many stars at their peak. Can you?
No. Oh, no. And it's the influx of obviously in Europe and other parts of the world. And it just the cyclical nature of it, where when you get a new team that comes in, an expansion team, it's going to take a bunch of years. Talent gets diluted, but then eventually it just rises back up. And no, I've never been around this much talent since before the expansions of the mid 90s.
I want to circle back to Giannis in a second, but follow me here.
Yeah.
So Steph Curry breaks the 3-point record, and it's entirely possible the Warriors could win the title this year, in which case, you know, he's 33 years old, and given his skill set, he could probably play till his late 30s fairly effectively. Mm-hmm. He's going to be adding a lot of points to his stats, and they could win again. And so Steph is probably like a top 25 player of all time now. But does he enter the top 10? Maybe even higher? Like, think about it. He's the greatest shooter of all time. He could win another title and add to his category, you know, totals. His, like, my point is, the ceiling for Steph is generationally high. Like, he will be one of the greatest players who ever lived. He might be the elite of that category.
And he's the leader right now. He's the betting favorite to win the MVP odds. I think Durant will eventually catch him. But the last time he won the MVP was like 8 years ago.
I heard a stat. It's 6 years. And with the exception of Wilt Chamberlain, who did it as a rookie. And then again, I believe 6 years later, this is, if he won this year, it would be the longest gap between two MVPs in history. So just to give you an idea of how hard it is to stay at this level for this long. So all of that said, Giannis might even be better when it's all said and done.
Could be. It absolutely could happen with Giannis. At number two, Bob, it's an obvious one. In the playoff, he leaves New England, goes to Tampa, starts out a little slow. Ooh, Bruce Arians, what's this fella? And then in the playoffs, he beats Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes. Tom Brady winning another Super Bowl.
Can I point something else out? They showed, like, yeah, just obviously because of the history, like, you see all these pictures of him over the years. Not only is he still winning, he looks better now.
I don't trust, how much work do you think he's had done? I feel like there's been some work done, and I question if that is his real hair color.
Really?
I do.
No, I kind of feel like it's all real, but maybe I just got sucked into the narrative.
Bobby's got the same hair color that I do. That was too Irish. I'm getting Irish. I can't do Paul McCartney. I cannot do a Paul McCartney impersonation.
Paul McCartney in a shillelagh.
Yeah, I know. It's magically delicious. I'm Paul McCartney.
He's holding one of those pipes with the long stem.
Yeah. I thought I could, Bob. Can't do it. But yeah, Brady number two.
Okay, so obviously it's incredible. But let me clear out. I'm gonna clear out so you can ISO this one. Tell us about why Tom Brady's so incredible and why he's the number two sports story of the year.
He's 44 years old, and currently he's leading the NFL in attempts, completions, yards, and touchdowns. He's never done that before, so he decides to do that in his 21st season. What makes him incredible is what the impact he has on other guys. Other guys stay, take less money. It's just the Brady impact, the Pied Piper of the NFL. And you know, I'll pick one specific play. When Tampa beat Buffalo, the record for all-time completions, he had a blitz. He had a guy in his face that was probably half his age. He throws this high arcing pass right to Mike Evans. It was perfect. It couldn't have been thrown in a better place for like a 35-yard gain. And you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, you're not allowed to do that at that age. The thing with Brady is you are both still amazed by what he does, but also numb. I don't know how you can both be numb and amazed at the same point, but Brady does that.
Well, it's the pornification again. When something is spectacular all the time, you lose sensation. I'm going to sum up that game against Buffalo this way, and I'm going to go to a succession reference that you won't get, but hopefully people out there do. Yeah. So I thought there's no way Buffalo's going to win this game. It was incredible that they came back the way they did, but going to OT, you know, they're just going to shut this down. And it's like when Kendall Roy was saying to Tom, when he was trying to convince Tom to come over to his side versus his dad, Logan. And Tom said back to Kendall, I don't mean to be rude, but I think you're going to lose because I've seen you get fucked a lot of times and I've never seen Logan get fucked. And in this case, Kendall is Buffalo and and Tom Brady is Logan.
Yeah. I can understand that reference just by seeing enough promos for the show. And yeah, you know, we've so rarely seen Tom fall flat on his face. It basically only happens against the Giants.
It really does make those two games with Eli kind of miraculous.
Well, the Giants actually outplayed New England in both those games. So there's something miraculous about it, Bob.
That just dropped in and history was thus rewritten. Okay. So number one story of the year for you in 2021, Maddie.
Canadian women winning gold in soccer, beating the States, then beating, I think it was Sweden. It's funny, my memory's horrible, but just some of the extras, the penalty kicks, the crazy saves, the Canadian women finally avenging what happened in London back like in 2012, winning gold in the Olympics.
I was going to say better game than when the Canadian women beat the American women in hockey.
Ooh, the one in I think it was at Sochi.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, oh my God.
And the net goal just like misses by inches and they come back and score at the very
That is one of my favorite games of all time. But that was not in this year. So the Canadian women winning gold in soccer.
I have a daughter in soccer, and it's just such a great sport for kids. And I don't come from a soccer culture. Like, my family didn't play it. We didn't watch it. I don't know anything about it. I treat soccer the same way I treat a trip to the art gallery. And I look at paintings. I'm like, I don't know anything about this, but I know what I like. And I gotta say, like, I kind of wish that I learned about this game, because it's kind of amazing, really. I don't know if this is because of Ted Lasso just further working on me, but there's, like, whether it was that or whether now it's the Canadian men's run as they start to do really exciting things with Alphonso Davies, like, it just feels like it would be more fun to be a soccer fan. I think the two most fun things to be fans of are soccer and wrestling.
Really?
Yeah. Well, wrestling is always changing. You know, it's like this gigantic soap opera. It's like a, you know, it's like Succession, but if Succession lasted for 45 years. But soccer, I think there's just so much news. Like, we're all excited about the 12-month leagues like the NBA now, like we're newcomers to this. But for soccer fans, they've been doing this for decades, whether it's transfer windows or international play. And, you know, the whole globe is your pitch. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that the Canadian women are so good at this, like, is an entry point for all of us. But we can only really do it from the national perspective, not the sporting perspective. But how fun would it be to actually understand how incredible an achievement that is, because you really understand the game and its global impact, you know? I feel like if I could go back again in terms of being a sports fan, I would chuck some of the North American ones, probably baseball, and bring in soccer.
Yeah, like, I get it, and it's nothing against soccer, but yeah, I've had plenty of fun as a sports fan for the last 40 years. And if I chuck baseball, then I'm not going to get bat flip. I'm not going to get Roy Howell. I mean, we can go back and forth on it. But listen, obviously it's an incredible sport. Everyone who loves it, knock yourself out. I have to always retreat back to my mantra that if you like everything, you love nothing. There's only so much time, Bob. And the things I love, I love.
Well, and I think you have a top five round wine, which is something you love, right? All right, let's hear it.
All right, just a shout out to top five wines of the year. Some of these are specific, some are more bigger picture. At number five, shout out to the Conseca wine import. My love for Spanish Grenache is growing. Everyone, find Grenache from Spain. At number four, Bob, everyone thinks Bordeaux is crazy expensive. You're wrong. Cru Bourgois, which is a style of Bordeaux wine you can find in the mid-20s. At number three and two, let's get some local ones. Long Dog Chardonnay from Prince Edward County. And from Niagara, Batchelder, his Gamay and Pinot Noir, incredible. And number one, I mentioned it before, but it deserves another round, South African Cabernet Sauvignon. Plenty of great stuff from $15 to $22, and it was my big eye-opener of the year.
Yeah, your big eye-opener. I went out and got some, and then I took a picture of it, and you're like, oh, no, that's shit.
Yeah.
So, like, fuck, Matt, come on. The sommelier, like, this is your number one discovery of the year. I went out and got something called The Legend of Big Bill, ridiculously big Cabernet Sauvignon, and you texted back to me after I showed it, and I bought, like, a bunch of fucking bottles of it, and I send you the picture of it. I go, how's this? You go, that looks ... fun. So, you know, be more specific.
Glen Ellie. Okay, Bob, Glen Ellie.
You know, you could have been more specific when I was on my way to the LCBO.
I was on air, Bob. I'm trying to text you stuff and I'm on air at the same time.
Sandra asked me, why doesn't Matt just tell you what to buy? Like, why does, like, again, I go back to this.
Because I would eat. I would need to be there, Bob. Every LCBO is different. I can't even go on LCBO, type something in, and do you know how hard it would be to cross-reference to find it at the specific LCBO that you're in? You can't shop at, like, Parkdale LCBO. You just go to this big general one. It's not as easy as it looks. If I was with you, I could guide you through it.
My top five records of the year. Tell me if you've heard of any of these bands.
You know I won't, but go for it.
Wolf Alice and their record Blue Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Pino
Palladino and Blake Mills, Notes with Attachments.
No.
The War on Drugs. I Don't Live Here Anymore.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Floating Points with Pharoah Sanders and the London Symphony Orchestra, Promises.
On my list.
Okay. And Turnstile, number one record of the year for me, a record called Mystery. Kind of very heavy, but pretty melodic and a lot of fun.
Okay, nice.
You're into that?
I like all those words you used.
That's how I feel when you're giving your wine recommendation.
Exactly.
Oh, and you think Beaujolais is expensive? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think that.
No. Beaujolais Nouveau. Come on, Bob, you can get a good thing for $13.
I'm looking, yeah, you mean like the Legend of Big Bill, ridiculously big Cabernet Sauvignon? Oh, that looks fun.
That sounds like it's got a lot of sugar in it.
Fucking Matt. Seriously. Like, hey, everybody, those five records, check them all out. They're specific. Or I'll give a recommendation. Get some rock and roll.
Spire, Glenn Ellie, Condé Stark.
You know what people should check out from 2020? Mm-hmm. Jazz.
We did this last week, Bob. We did this last week.
Well, I got burned by it this week. I got to go back to... Can I even return wine to the LCBO?
Yes, you 100% can return wine at the LCBO.
It's going to show that it hasn't been messed with because it has a screw top.
That's fine. You're good. Just here's the thing, Bob. When if the bottle of wine has a lot of adjectives and verbs... No, I don't want to say that. No, still try it. It might be good. I don't want to be wine snob guy. Just, you know, like
you be a sommelier is you say, I don't know, try it and see if you like it. Like it's like, cause I feel like I could be a sommelier then.
The point is that even wines that I might not enjoy, those wines are still important because they're often the gateway wines for someone.
Oh my God, to the wine. Like being a record critic and saying, well, I don't really have any takes on this because you might like this and then like something else.
That's how we're ending the pod, Bob. Is this really the last one of the year? Just you and I just bickering?
I like that it ended in a staring contest. I think if anything about 2021 is proven true right now, it's like this moment. We're the last episode of the year. We're just staring at each other in disgust.
Bob, here's what I'm hoping for in 2022. Actual staring contests, because it means we'll be together.
Oh, God. You know, I apologize for the audio quality of this, but Matt, by law, is on lockdown. You know, I've lost all desire. I've named 2022 aspirationally the year of pants. I just got to go back to wearing pants. I'm wearing pants right now. I don't want to. I feel like you on a plane. I'm wearing a shirt with buttons and pants.
Oh, there you go, Bob. Nice job. Nice job.
You know, dress for the job you want. Apparently the job I want is grown up.
Good luck with that. Bob, we are out of time, so we may or may be there next week, depending on holiday schedules. But if not, I love you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. All the best to you and your family.
Love to you and yours, Matt. Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.